Canto 4, Chapter 25, entitled The Characteristics of King Puranjana, text number 46 and 47. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is text 47. Gatyotavir Mukti. Gatyotavir Mukti. Chan. Rad. Dara. Ekatra. Nimite. Vibrajitam. Janapadam, Yati, Tadyam, Yumat, Shaka, Kadyotavir Mukti Chabra, Varave Katra Nirmite, Vibhajitam Janapadam, Yati, Padhyam Dumachakam Kadyotavir Mukti Chakra Vara Ekatra Nirmite Vipajitam Janapadam Kadyotavir Dumachakam Kadyotavir Mukti Chakra Shikatra Nirmite Vidajitam Janaparam Yaditabhyam Dumatshakam. Kadyota, all the same, Kadyota, Avir Mukti. of the name Abhirmukhi. Cha, also Prak, towards the eastern side. Varau, two gates. Ekatra, in one place. Nimiti, were constructed. Vibhrajitam, of the name Vibhrajita. Janapadam, city. Yati, used to go. Tabhyam, by then. Dumat, of the name Duman. Shakaha, with his friend. Translation: the two gates named Kadyota and Abhirmukhi were situated facing the eastern side, but they were constructed in one place. Through those two gates, the king used to go to the city of Vibhrajita, accompanied by a friend whose name was Duman. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, the two names, Kadyota and Abhirmukhi, means glowworm and torchlight. This indicates that of the two eyes, the left eye is less powerful in its ability to see. Although both eyes are constructed in one place, one is stronger than the other in the power to see. The king, or living entity, uses these two gates to see things properly, but he cannot see unless accompanied by a friend whose name is Duman. This friend is the sun. Although the two eyes are situated in one place, they have no power to see without the sunlight. Vibhrajitam janapadam. If one wants to see something very clearly, vibhrajitam, he must see it with two eyes and the assistance of his friend, the sunlight. Within this body, everyone is a king because he uses his different gates according to his own will. Although he is very much proud of his power to see or hear, he is nonetheless dependent on the assistance of nature. I read 46. Panchadvaras Tapaurasya Dakshinaika Chatotara Paschimidve Anushante Namami Nirva Varnaye. Translation: my dear king, of the nine doors, five lead to the eastern side, one leads to the northern side, one led towards the southern side, and two led towards the western side. I shall try to give the names of these different doors. Purport. Of the seven doors on the surface, namely the two eyes, two ears, two nostrils, and one mouth, five look forward. And these are described as the doors facing the eastern side. Since looking forward means seeing the sun, these are described as the eastern gates, for the sun rises in the east. The gate on the northern side of the gate, the gate on the northern side and the gate on the southern side represent two ears, and the two gates facing the western side represents the rectum and genitals. All these doors and gates are described below. And the purpose. My Gyanam, Piramandashyaganam, Slataya, Shakshuram, Vintasman, Vom Shikaya, Krishna Pristaya, Bhutarees, Mati Bhakti Vedanta, Swamini, Pidamani, Namaste, Sarasati Devi, Gauravani, Vishani, Mir Vishesh, Sundarani, Pasti, Sadai. Translation again. My dear king, of the nine doors, five led towards the eastern side, one led toward the northern side, and one led to the southern side, and two led to the western side. I shall try to give the names of these different doors. The two gates named Kadyota and Abhirmukhi were situated facing the eastern side, but they were constructed in one place. Through these gates, the king used to go to the city of Vibhrajita, accompanied by a friend whose name was Dhyaman. Narada Muni is describing the body using the allegorical example of a city, and the senses or the openings of the body are considered gates. So of the nine gates of the body, the seven are on the surface, it means the face, there's seven here. So five of two, four, five are facing the east, and then one is here is facing north, one is facing south. So we're describing the conditioned soul here, how he's trapped within this city of his body with nine gates. And how he's utilizing these gates or entrances for his to fulfill his various desires. So human life can be used for two purposes, either sense gratification or self-realization, liberation. The other species, they don't have this opportunity. The lower species, animals, etc., they also have nine gates, but they can't utilize their life for self-realization. Animals. There's a special concession for a human being. The choice is yours, just like Supabha mentions at the end of these purports. Within this body, everyone is a king, because he sees his different gates according to his own will. So he uses his different gates according to his own will. That means a conditioned soul, wherever there's some sense impulse or some sense attraction, then naturally the mind will go there, thinking, feeling and willing. When there's some attraction there, then the living entity is helplessly drawn towards that, because happiness is what everyone is seeking. Everyone wants to be happy, satisfied. So as soon as there's a feeling, a sense, or an idea of happiness, then natural inclination is to go there. Normal. So everyone is in this same position, except for a few rare souls who are actually beyond the bodily conception of life. Otherwise, we're all subject to these attractions and repulsions of the senses, but the senses are the medium to achieve our desires. Whether you have spiritual desires or material desires, you have to use the senses. So the senses have to be there; they have a part to play. We cannot actually deny that. But if you're using for sense gratification, then we hear we have a problem. Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that sense of enjoyment we get from sense gratification, the sense of happiness is there, right? But and then we'll pursue that, but ultimately that that sense of happiness or activity, to get that happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. We are, in one sense, we are enjoyers. The soul is the enjoyer within the body. Otherwise, where is this desire coming from? His actual constitution, in the essence, the soul's essence, he's still an enjoyer, but that enjoyment is coming in association with service to the Supreme Lord, Jivatma and Paramatma. The part, the hand is a part of the body. The hand's business is to enjoy the hand's business is to serve the body. It can't enjoy separately. If it tries, that's Maya. But when the hand acts for service of the whole body, takes the food, puts it in the mouth, and everyone plays it, then the hand is satisfied and healthy. So like that, when in the actual Sanatana Dharma, the constitution of the soul, the Atma, is that we are the eternal servant of God. We're created for His pleasure. So that performing the Lord's, acting for the Lord's pleasure, to please the Lord, is actual perfection of human life. And if one does that, then there's no need to take a material body again. One becomes, because that's one's only desire. So that is what we want to achieve. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness, we're not trying to achieve something, actually, we're trying to go back to what we are. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema. The soul is the eternal servant of Krishna. Not only servant, he's a servant with love and affection. So that's there. That's you can't change that, you can't stop that, but now it's covered with ignorance, with this false ego, with this identifying ourselves as this body and senses. Therefore we're trying to enjoy, we're trying to get that happiness in this material world through sense objects. It is Maya. Because the soul has nothing to do with this material world, nothing to do with this body, in fact. But we're here, we're in this material world, we're in this body, and we want happiness. We can't deny that. So that's the fact of life, but how we will get our happiness, this is the actual question. Where will you get your happiness? This is your choice. This is your actual freedom, only freedom, really. Where to place your desire, where to endeavor for happiness. It has to be there. You can't deny it. Who can deny it? We're all sitting here because we want to be happy. Right? Otherwise, where you come? We think we're utilizing our free will. We've chosen to come to Krishna for our happiness, for our better state of existence. Right? And everyone else is doing what they want to do. Happiness in the mode of ignorance, there's happiness in the mode of passion, there's happiness in the mode of goodness, there's happiness in Krishna consciousness, or transcendental happiness. So somehow or other we're fortunate, we come to Krishna. But the thing is, we're still looking for our happiness. But we're not actually looking for Krishna's happiness. That's the state of the pure unalloyed devotees. Pure devotees. But still, because we're following the process which is directly connected with Krishna, then this approach, because we're approaching directly Krishna. Krishna means his name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, his devotees, his service. Then that false ego, for illicit desire, quickly gets burned up. It's a very direct process, because you're directly approaching Krishna. The processes of jnana, yoga, karma, they're indirect. First you're going to get purified, and then you turn and approach Krishna. But in the process of bhakti, you're directly approaching Krishna. Krishna is the supreme purifier. So it's very quick, this process, relatively speaking. Otherwise, it's always troublesome. So much confusion in this world, even amongst the spiritualists, religionists, right? There's so much difference, so many paths, right? So much confusion. So anyway, that is it. It's very confusing. when people sometimes ask questions that they're having problems or they're doubtful, I often recommend that they read Bhagavad Gita from the second chapter, which is a summary study of the Bhagavad Gita. And I tell them, you read from the second chapter, from verse 55 to the end of the chapter. Read it every day for 1 week. See what happens. And because I've done it myself when I'm not feeling spiritually strong, and I found it works because it's very repetitive, and it sinks in. So, if you don't mind, I can read some of the things that Srila Prabhupada says on this subject. This is a summary of the Gita, and it starts from 54. Arjuna is asking Krishna the symptoms of a transcendentalist. Right? How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? So it's describing the position of a transcendental person, which we want to come attain. It's not us, but it is the goal. So I'm going to read the purports. So in 255, Srila Prabhupada said, The Bhagavatam affirms that any person who is fully Krishna conscious or in devotional service of the Lord has all the good qualities of the great sages, whereas a person who is not so transcendentally situated has no good qualification because he's sure to take refuge in his own mental concoctions. Consequently, it is rightly said herein that one has to give all kinds of sense desires manufactured by mental concoction. Artificially, such sense desires cannot be stopped. But if one engages in Krishna consciousness, then automatically sense desires subdue without extraneous effort. Therefore, one has to engage himself in Krishna consciousness without hesitation, for this devotional service will instantly help one onto the platform of transcendental consciousness. So Prabhupada is saying, artificially, these desires, they cannot be, sense desires, they cannot be stopped, they cannot give up. We can't live without desires. There's no life without desires, Prabhupada said, otherwise you're a dead stone. So he said some philosophers attain to become desireless, but actually it's not possible. By nature, the living entity is a person, and his position is to serve the Supreme Lord. So how can there be no desire? There must be there, thinking, feeling, willing. Otherwise, how will he know what to do? So it must, desire must be there. Desires, well, we know desires are there. We can't stop desires, even though we may try. But we have to live with. And the senses are the medium by which we're going to fulfill our desires. Whatever we do. So the desires are there, and the senses are there, and they have to be used. Then in 59, Srila Prabhupada says, unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to cease from sense enjoyment. Because that desire for happiness is there. So unless you're transcendental, when you're transcendental, it means the platform of Brahma Bhuta, then naturally you're completely satisfied, you're experiencing the happiness of Brahmanda. Yeah? You're experiencing yourself, the soul, which is Brahman, with the same quality as Krishna. So you're actually experiencing that. But until then, you cannot stop the cease from sense enjoyment, he says, Prabhupada's saying. Then later on in the purport he says, therefore, then he's talking about, if you try to restrict these your senses by following different processes like yoga and other things, He says it's very difficult. And he said, therefore, restrictions are there for the less intelligent neophytes in the spiritual advancement of life. But such restrictions are only good until one actually has a taste for Krishna consciousness. When one is actually Krishna conscious, he automatically loses his taste for pale things. Again, he's repeating that until you have a higher taste, it's not possible to be attracted by sense enjoyment. Because enjoyment is what we want. So if you're getting it, it means taste, you're getting some enjoyment. Only then you can be indifferent to a lower enjoyment. In other words, unless you get a high enjoyment, you're stuck with the lower enjoyment, and there's not much you can do about it. Because it's what you want. It's what you need that. You need that enjoyment. Otherwise, we don't feel fulfilled or complete. Then in the next purport, Prabhupada said, there are many learned sages. This sloka is saying how the senses are so strong and impetuous, they forcibly carry the way of mind, even of a man of discrimination, is endeavoring to control them. Very difficult. There are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses, but in spite of their endeavor, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. But then he gives examples like Vishwamitra, Lord Shiva, etc., etc., who are trying to, in the practice of yoga, trying to control the senses, because the senses actually have no shelter. It's just your own intelligence, your own endeavor, is trying to restrain the senses from the sense objects. But of course the desire is still there, so it doesn't, you know, it's a continuous job until somehow or other you actually break through that. A long, long, difficult process, because the desires don't stop, you see. And then Sri Prabhupada said, therefore it's very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease from such material engagements. You can't stop. You can't stop, you see, unless you get something like that. Then he gives the example of Yamuna Acharya, who when he thinks of sense gratification, he spits. I mean, mundane sense gratification, he spits, because he's got a higher taste. That's Yamuna Acharya. Then next verse 62, Krishna says, one who is not Krishna conscious is subject to material desires. While contemplating the objects of the senses require real engagement. And if they are not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. In the material world, everyone, including Lord Shiva and Brahma, to say nothing of other demigods in the heavenly planets, is subject to the influence of sense objects. And the only method to get out of this puzzle of material existence is becoming Krishna conscious. Great puzzle, right? Material existence. You have desires and you want to stop them, so you're endeavoring on your own to stop them. It means I will combat Durga Devi, who is the all-powerful supreme goddess in this material world, Maya Devi. She's controlling everyone in the material world. But we're thinking, no, by my endeavor I can overcome her influence. So it's not possible. She's Krishna's energy, deputed by Krishna to bewilder us. She's appointed by Krishna for this purpose. How on earth can we, tiny little entity, think that we can actually withstand her influence? So this is Maya. That's what you're up against. The karmis, the gyanis, and the yogis, that's what they're up against. They're one-on-one against Maya, because they're not taking shelter anywhere. They're using their own faculty, their own intelligence, their own ability, their own culture or whatever it is to face. But of course, there's still no shelter. Where is the shelter? So it's a very, very difficult and dangerous path. Then, 68, that was... One can curb the forces of sense gratification only by means of Krishna consciousness, or engage in all the senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As enemies are curbed by superior force, the senses are similarly curbed not by any human endeavor, but only by keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. It means, Prabhupada says, they cannot be curbed by any human endeavor. That's you and me, if we're humans. So, very difficult by your own endeavor to stop the senses, control the senses. But it's you have the positive engagement, you have to keep the senses engaged. So if they're not engaged in Krishna consciousness, they have to be engaged because desires have to be there. Desires are coming constantly. So they will, the senses will act. You're bound to go out through these gates of the senses. You have to, unless you want to be miserable. You know, you have to. If you want to live, you've got to go through these avenues to achieve your desire, to achieve your goals. So, Prabhupada said, one who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really establishing intelligence, and that one should practice this art under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, is called a sadaka, or a suitable candidate for liberation. Congratulations, all these sadakas. you've done the right thing. The next one, Dr. Prabhupada. Prabhupada says, as long as one has a material body, the demands of the body for sense gratification will continue. They will continue. Then he gives the example of the devotees, how this sloka is about how the ocean is always steady, even though so many rivers are constantly pouring in, the ocean is always steady. So similarly, a Krishna conscious person, which we're talking about, transcendentalist, is not disturbed by these desires which are constantly coming. It doesn't say the desires stop. So to try to stop the desires is actually illusory. As long as you have a material body, the desires will come. You cannot stop that. But if you're satisfied in Krishna consciousness, then these desires come and they go. You don't follow them up. You don't. So Srila Prabhupada said that is the proof of a Krishna conscious man, one who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. So desires are always present, but you lost the inclination to the desires, the attraction is there, so the desire, the mind is saying yes, enjoyment. But because of higher taste, or in the sadhaka, that means just intelligence, but because of the transcendentalist higher taste, he's satisfied, then he doesn't go there, he ignores them. But still they're coming, the desires are always coming, his sense impulses, impressions are always coming, they don't stop. But a person is satisfied, he doesn't deal with them. He doesn't try to enjoy them, he doesn't try to stop them. That's the karmis and the yogis, that's their business, and the gyanis, they do that. They try to control and stop them, or the karmis, they try to enjoy them. But the devotee, a devotee becomes actually indifferent. But they don't go away, they're still there. But because you have something better, then you can ignore them. So that's the actual secret of living in the material world amidst all the desires, etc. Because he remains satisfied in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he can remain steady like the ocean and therefore enjoy full peace. Others, however, who want to fulfill desires, even up to the limit of liberation, what to speak of material success, never attain peace. The fruitive workers, the karmis, the salvationists, the gyanis. Someone else is joining in. Competition out there. Maybe some good comment, who knows? It sounded like an ET's language. The fruitive workers, the salvationists, and also the yogis who are after mystic powers are all unhappy because of unfulfilled desires. For the Krishna conscious person is happy in the service of the Lord. He has no desires to be fulfilled. In fact, he does not even desire liberation from the so-called material bondage. Devotees of Krishna have no material desires, therefore they are in perfect peace. And the last shloka. In the Srila Prabhupada saying, there is no difference between the kingdom of God and the devotional service of the Lord, since both of them are on the absolute plane. To be engaged in a transcendental loving service of the Lord is to have attained the spiritual kingdom. In the material world there are activities for sense gratification, whereas in the spiritual world there are activities of Krishna consciousness. Attainment of Krishna consciousness, even during this life, is immediate attainment of Brahman. And one who is situated in Krishna consciousness has certainly already entered into the kingdom of God. That's the section I recommend people who are having trouble. 55, chapter 2, verses 55 until the end. If you keep on, you read it for 1 week, every day, because it's stressing the point that you're not the controller, you're not the enjoyer, we're actually bound up. We're meant to be serving Krishna, but for his enjoyment. And when we do that, that's the actual highest happiness. The examples are there by the pure devotees of the Lord. We read how such ecstasy they feel. They're not interested in liberation or anything. In Srivas Thakur's house, in the Mahaprakash Leela, when Gauranga Mahaprabhu called Kulaveta Shrida and he offered him all the benedictions, he took on the form of the Lord, the form of Vishnu. Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm giving benedictions, take something. He said, I don't want anything, take something. You have to take something. I'm the Lord, I'm offering. If God is asking you that, what will you say? You and me, what would we say? So he was declining, so he said, I know you're very poor, I'll give you the opulence of Indra. I'll give you complete riches, which is practically attainment of swaga, the goal of the karmas. He said, no, I don't want that. What am I going to do with that? Then I'll give you liberation, which is the goal of the jnanis. No. Hey, liberation, no. Liberation, there's no service to Krishna there. Don't tease me like this. I'll give you the Ashta Siddhi. Hey, the goal of the yogis. I don't want that. Okay, I call a Vaikuntha airplane and take you back to Vaikuntha. So I don't want that. What do you want? So I'm simply satisfied with this service to you. Wherever you appear, if I have to have a benediction, okay. If I really have to have one, because he's completely satisfied in his loving relationship with Gauranga. He doesn't need anything else. So that proves that is higher than anything else. The benediction, if he has to have one, was that whenever Gauranga appears, you seem to have fun in coming and harassing me and stealing my vegetables and making me cry and making me angry. That seems to give you fun. So let me take birth, wherever you appear, let me take birth in a position like this so I can give you some pleasure. So that's the actual self-satisfaction of the pure devotee. But it proves, because he's rejecting all those other goals of these other transcendental processes. So this is a practical demonstration that we saw. Anyway, ultimately, we got to admit that we cannot live without desires. And we have to admit that the senses are the only way we're going to fulfill those desires. This is now how to do it. How to fulfill those desires. So sense gratification is actually not on the table by all the information that we've had. Sense gratification leads to rebirth. It doesn't solve the problem. So that's out of the question. So how will you attain freedom from the material world? So it's quite obvious for us, for our Bhakti Shastras that the path of yoga, karma, jnana are very, very troublesome and very difficult and long. And practically speaking, impossible in Kali Yuga, practically speaking. So therefore, really, there's only one recourse is to take to the direct process of Krishna consciousness. And Krishna says, immediately you take to that process, you take to the process of surrender to Krishna, and you're absorbed in that service, that's the Brahman platform. You may not be able to stay on that platform, but while you're actually absorbed in the service of the Lord with the right consciousness, that I'm doing this for the Lord's pleasure, but that's the actual liberated state. So then it's a question of practice until it becomes normal. Keep on practicing until that becomes a normal way of life, and you know, it's a gradual process, but it's much quicker than all of the other processes. So this is the these chapters on King Paranjan that Narada has given is an indirect way of preaching of turning us around, of waking us up, of giving us a call, because he's talking to King Prachina Parisat, and he was an expert karmi. He was a king, he was a very pious king. They're all pious generally, but with these examples, pious people, pious king. He was performing all these karmakanda activities, all Vedic, all scriptural, very religious person. He's completely caught up in that, you know, I'm doing my duty and performing all these sacrifices and getting these great results, but he actually never knew the real purpose of life. So then Narada Muni, and it would have been very difficult to preach to King Prachina Parisat. It wasn't like the his sons, the Prachetas, or the other sons of Brahma, who Narada preached to. They weren't actually involved. They were young. They were going to the Prachetas, for instance, they were going to the to perform tapasya before they took up administrative posts. Before they came rulers. So they were ready. But the father, he was, although they had enough intelligence to send them off to perform austerities to get some shakti, but he didn't actually know the real purpose of life. But it had been very difficult to preach to him if Narada Muni said, hey, you know, what are you doing? Because everything he's doing was very religious. The Vedic sacrifices, they're all prescribed. Look, here it is, it's Veda. How can you say? He said, I'm very religious. From morning till night, I'm doing all these, giving in charity and performing these. So it's been very difficult to preach to him. My father did this, his father did this. We hear this, right? When we preach to the, talk to the Hindus. Why are you saying that? My father did this, his father did this, his father did it, and this is our tradition. What's wrong? Of course, there's nothing wrong, because it's something for everyone. Krishna says, Vasudeva Sava Mithi Sava Mahatma Dula. It's very rare that someone actually surrenders to Krishna. So he's talking about a person who's practiced karma yoga for many, many births, hundreds of births. Practice Jnana Yoga for hundreds of births, become liberated, self-realized, then he surrenders to Krishna. Not an easy thing. So therefore, because people want sense gratification mainly in the material world, they don't want to surrender to Krishna because of the false ego, you want to take his position. So therefore, there's a lot of purification is necessary to get the actual adhikar that you'll be able to. And that purification is done through karma, Jnana, and yoga. You have to do that, otherwise they're not ready. But it takes many births. Then you become gradually free from passion and ignorance, because you're following Krishna's instruction in the Vedas. But it's you know, Krishna says those who worship the demigods, they're less intelligent, right? Upper Vedas are. But Krishna, the Vedas are telling you to worship the demigods. In the sacrifice, you worship Agni, you worship it like this. So it's Krishna's telling them to do it because that's what they want, and they won't listen to anything else. They'll do it their way anyway, so you better, it's a compromise for these people to keep them civilized, to keep them religious, to keep them on the progressive path forward. Otherwise they'll speculate and do something on their own, and then they'll go completely off. So it's a concession. All these things are concessions. And because people won't surrender to Krishna. We didn't come in this world to surrender to Krishna. We come in this world to take Krishna's position. We want to be God. That is a problem. So just by hearing, by telling somebody that actually you're in Maya, you're supposed to be serving God, you're not supposed to be competing with God, you can't start like that. Although they do in ISKCON. But you can't really start like that. You've got to bring them in a kind of soft way. And so, because they're not ready to hear that. It's not what they want to hear. Right? Some people hear the four regulative principles. That's it. They're gone. It's too much. Too fanatical. So they're not what they want. So you have to. So therefore, for those type of people, then religion is a Vedic religion. And then for Upadhammas, then the modern religions, therefore they teach even sub-religious principles, even less than that. So then these other acharyas come, they teach in principles which are not so elevated. Essence is there, but in general. So, our choice. We're the king, we think we're the king in his body, and we have so many avenues, so many gates, glittering gates, that we can go out through. Huh? The eyes. So many ways we can go out, and so much in feeling of enjoyment, good ideas how to enjoy is coming in. So that's our position, and we want enjoyment. So whatever sense at this particular time is offering the best idea, then we go that way. We go out this gate, or this gate, or this gate, or this gate, whatever gate it is, sense of touch. Because we're looking for enjoyment, you see. Because enjoyment we're not experiencing. Ananda is our nature, Satchit Ananda. We're not experiencing that Haladini potency we covered. So there's a vacancy there. Where is that Ananda? Where's that happiness? Where's that peace? Where's that Sat? Where's knowledge? We're in ignorance. So there's a vacant, there's a gap, there's a hole in the heart. There's a vacant spot there. We don't know what it is. But obviously if you analyze it, you can understand it's Satchit Ananda. Nobody likes to be in ignorance. Everyone likes to be peaceful and happy. That's Sat existing. Nobody likes this trouble. And everyone wants to be happy. That's Ananda. That's all people are looking for. Because that's natural. That is your natural. That's your birthright to experience that. But now we're not experiencing. It's covered. We're covered by this false ego and different layers of illusion. But that the desire for those is still present. Therefore, where is it? Where's that happiness? Where's that peace? Where's that knowledge? Therefore, I'm going here on these helter-skelter roads trying to achieve it. Isn't Maya? It's not there. It's not there. The end of the road is, you know, the road never ends. Knowledge is unlimited, that road never ends. Sense gratification, you go there, you meet sense gratification at the end, but how long can you remain there? After a while, that disappoints you. Right? Senses come into contact with a sense object, after a while, it'll go, it'll disappoint you. You can't continue, or how much can you eat? How much can you enjoy eating? How much can you enjoy anything? The more you keep on going, they're going to kill you, right? Any sense gratification, practically speaking, gross sense gratification anyway. So it has an end. And then after that's finished, then again you want to start. So it's like the roads are actually dead ends. They don't lead anywhere. Only frustration. There's an Narada Muni is explaining like this, in this allegorical way, to give us another perspective on our situation, which is necessary. We need to see in different perspectives, because we've heard it so many times, the same thing. Still we're exploring those avenues for our happiness. But it's Maya. So therefore these chapters are pushing us back to Krishna. And the other chapters, like the 10th canto, they're putting us, attracting us towards Krishna. And this way of pushing. So we need both. We need both. Otherwise, if there's no pushing, we become complacent. So therefore, we need that. Push, push. And we have to take it seriously. And then we have to actually make that decision ourselves, that it's really up to us which road we want to go down. They're the same paths, they're the same senses you're going to use. You can't deny that. But why you're using the sense? What is the result you want from utilizing this sense? That is your freedom and that's your choice. So we have to make the right choice. Use that for Krishna service. Otherwise, the option is my service. Then it's Maya again. Rebirth. Srimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Dai go premanandi hari hari. Any questions or comments on this topic? Thank you.